Join us now for Episode 9 of Midnight Cab, The Mystery of the Screaming Woman.
January 25th. The second thing I did when I got back to Toronto from my Christmas holidays in Big River was to take Krista out to a real fancy restaurant. The first thing I did was save the money to pay for it. It didn't turn out to be any big hassle or anything. We'd planned to park the car and use the fold-up wheelchair Krista keeps in the back, but the sidewalks were full of snow, so we had to double park out in front of the place, and Krista used her crutches to go in, and then she waited for me in the, I don't know, foyer, while I ran back out and parked the car. No big deal. But it's these kind of things you never think about. Snow on the sidewalk is a big obstacle. Like, you're grounded, if you live in a wheelchair.
How's your steak? How's your lobster?
Krista looked terrific. She outfoxed all the other women in the place, and it was a high-class restaurant, too. It had huge gilded mirrors on all the walls and plush velvet chairs. When I wasn't watching her, I was watching her reflection. She'd done something to her hair. I don't know what, but it looked more gold than blonde, all swept up and over on one side, and long, dangly earrings, and her lipstick seemed redder than usual, and her dress had a kind of deep scoop neck on it, and her skin was incredibly smooth and white, and her breasts were sort of right there.
Did that surprise you?
Oh, yeah. I expected more like a big city novel, bluesy, moody, yeah. You know, Sonny Boy Williamson? I mean, that's what I wanted to write, but in the meantime, there were all these crazy images of this small town floating through my head. I kept pushing them back, pushing them back. Then I finally realized that's what's there. That's what I have to write.
Walker, how does that go? You can take the boy out of the country.
Yeah, but it's like, it's surrealistic. It's art.
Oh, well, that's good.
You're doing it to me again.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm glad you're writing, Walker.
Yeah. It's like a dam opened or something. One day, I'm going to write about you.
What about?
Oh. Your hair. Your eyes like blue crystal. Your neck.
That's the outside of me, not me.
No, I'll write about all of you.
Your eyes are the color of the chocolate pudding my mother used to make when I was a kid.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I love the way your nose bends in such a weird direction.
I love your nose. Your lips.
I love your ears. I love the way your hair curls and falls over your collar. Our food's getting cold.
Yeah.
And that was that. We didn't even bother going to the show afterwards. We went straight to my place at about 60 miles an hour. Her clothes, my clothes, they were strewn all over the place. Floor, lamp, tape deck. It was great.
So, where is she?
Oh, I'm here, Dolly. Where's Krista?
That's what I just asked you. I've been sitting here doing her job for 2 hours. She's 2 hours late.
She's never late.
Yeah. AP cabs. Okay, where do you want to go? What do you want to go there for? It's over, you jerk. It's midnight. Guy wants to go to the Leafs game. This city is full of disoriented people.
Did you phone her place?
Her mother says she came downtown early, about 4, to see if she could find Molly. She thought Krista might have hooked up with you later.
No, I haven't seen her. I saw her last night. We went out on our night off, but I haven't seen her since.
Yeah, well, this is terrific. I can't be wondering where people are all the time. This is not the lost and found. I'm trying to run a business here.
Who's Molly? Aren't you going to answer that?
The hell with it. It's the cab line. It's not Krista. Maybe we should phone the cops. What do you think?
Mr. Piatelli, who is Molly?
She's nobody. She's a bag lady. I found her a couple of winters ago, living in the old wooden garage out back. I was going to give her the boot. I mean, what if the garage fell on her head, you know? But Krista. They got to be friends or something. Krista checks up on her once in a while.
And Krista went to meet her today.
Well, you don't meet Molly. You find her.
Mr. Pietelli knew about this drop-in center on Dundas Street where Krista would sometimes take Molly, so we decided I'd check it out first, see if Krista had been there and if they knew where she might be now before we completely panicked and called the cops.
We can go in here. Want a coffee?
No, thanks.
We have 3 sleepovers tonight. When it's cold, if somebody wants to, we let them. We're not supposed to, fire regulations and all that, but the cops pretend they don't notice. It works out. Except someone has to pull night shift. Guess who, eh?
So you wouldn't have seen Krista then, even if she came in today?
No. Sit down, take a load off. Maybe there's something in Molly's file. This isn't like an official counseling place or anything, but we keep some records. All these women want is a place to come in, get warm, have a coffee and a donut, talk if they want. Anything heavy at all, and they just disappear. Half of them are paranoid, you know, and the other half are as ornery as I am. Okay. Krista took Molly over to the clinic last Wednesday. She had an infected cut on her hand. Molly's not one of our regulars, you know. Krista's the only one who seems to know where she hangs out. Molly says she's 55. That's interesting.
Why?
Well, she looks like an old shoe and everything, but I bet she's not over 35. Here's something. Jenny's handwriting.
What is it?
Looks like a note to herself. Edward Cumberland, Victoria, B.C. Says he's Molly's brother. Call Krista. Can she find Molly?
Inspector Kiss, homicide.
Hi, Inspector. It's Walker Devereaux.
Are you still alive?
Yeah.
All your exploits, I thought you'd be stiffer than a board by now.
No, listen, I just wanted to say... I've got this friend. Well, she's my girlfriend, kind of, actually. And...
Well, I'm thrilled. Thanks for calling.
No, wait, I mean... Could you do me a favor? She's only been missing a few hours, but it isn't like her at all, and I know I'll just get the runaround if I call missing persons, so I wondered if you could get the word out, you know, to the patrol car somehow? To look for her car? Please?
It's not like her.
No.
And you called me. Okay, what's the car?
It's a 79 Toyota Tercel hatchback, painted bright orange, with black racing stripes.
Oh, yeah?
I gave Inspector Kiss the name of the woman at the drop-in center in case he wanted to talk to the other worker about Molly's brother. And I hit it down to the foot of the city. That's where she said Molly would likely be, below river in Queen Street somewhere. It was bleak. Mostly warehouses and railroad tracks and transport trucks pulled off to the side waiting to load up in the morning. A maze of narrow streets, dead ends, frozen snowbanks surrounding the odd streetlight. Who could live down here out in the open? Who could survive? It was 2:00 in the morning. I circled and circled, and nothing moved. And no orange and black Toyota in sight.
Hey, Walker, you there?
Yeah, Mr. Piadelli?
She hasn't showed up yet.
No?
Her old man, he keeps calling. He's got a thing about you. What time did Krista get home last night?
I don't know. I guess around 1:30.
Georgie Papadopoulos says it was more like 3. You ever meet Krista's old man?
Nope.
Yeah, well, he's this great big Greek guy, 6'4", he's terrible temper, and he's upset.
So am I.
Yeah, hold on a minute, got another call.
Oh, jeez, Krista. Where are you? What the hell are you doing?
Walker, Inspector Kiss, he wants you to call him. He says find the phone right now.
Okay, Walker, we got it.
The car.
Fast, huh? Well, I've got to admit the color helped. It's at the top of River Street, on the edge of Riverdale Park. It's empty.
No.
It's pulled off to the side of the road, doors unlocked, no indication of any struggle, blood. This girl, is she, what is she, handicapped or something? Hand controls.
Yeah, well, not really. I mean, she uses a wheelchair, crutches for short distances. I'll go up there.
Walker, the brother, Edward Cumberland.
Yeah?
Well, apparently he came around to that drop-in center a couple of days ago. They called Krista to see if she could help him locate his sister. So she met him there today, and the two of them went looking for Molly.
Okay.
Walker.
What?
This Edward Cumberland, we ran a check. He's staying at the King Edward Hotel, Suite 1605, but, well, he's not there right now. A funny thing, though.
What is?
Well, he's looking for his sister, and he's rented a bridal suite.
Well, maybe he's on his honeymoon.
I don't think so.
When I pulled my cab up behind Krista's car, there was no one in sight. No cops, nothing. I don't know. I expected a couple of cop cars, at least. Tracking dogs. Searchlights. The doors on her car were still unlocked. Her aluminum crutches were gone from the back. It seemed unlikely if someone were dragging her into another car, they'd let her stop for her crutches, unless she went willingly. But if she did, why wouldn't she have locked the car? Behind the last house on the street, the Don Valley stretched out to the east, black and deep, as if the city had been split in two. I could see the lights on Broadview Avenue as it wound its way up the far hill, and somewhere down in the middle of all that darkness, the Don River swept silently along, full of ice and debris. And then the cops arrived.
Is that your cab?
Yeah.
Are you Walker Devereaux?
Oh, yeah, that's me.
We found your friend's car.
What about my friend?
Nah, nobody's around. According to our information, she's only been missing for 4 hours.
Five hours.
Oh, 5 hours. Right. So, she could have had car trouble. She could be visiting in one of these houses. She could have gone off with friends.
Yeah, why wouldn't she have called?
Listen, I'll tell you what. If I knew the answer to that, we'd be able to calm down about 1,000 people a night. Here's what happened. If she doesn't show up by tomorrow, we do a door-to-door along the street. We search the immediate area. We put out an information. But it has to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, well, great, thanks.
But meanwhile, take it easy. Hey, it'll be okay.
Thanks.
I trudged through the snow towards Riverdale Park. The two cops sat in their cruiser watching me, probably thinking I was nuts. I didn't care. A wide path through the snow, made by dogs and their owners, kids on toboggans, cross-country skiers, worked along the edge of the ravine. Far below, a woods stretched out stark in the moonlight. I knelt down on the path. There were holes in the snow, all right, but it was hard to tell if they were from Krista's crutches or not, whether they were running parallel or just randomly spaced, the butt end of a hockey stick, somebody's cane. Now the cops would be having a real laugh. Sherlock Holmes.
Krista, what are you doing to me? My stomach feels like I just swallowed a family of weasels.
And then I saw something lying further along in the path. It was just a plastic bag from a Max store, but inside, the frozen crust of someone's salami sandwich, a half-eaten apple, a half-eaten banana, some cigarette butts carefully wrapped in cellophane. And then, a little further along, scattered down the side of the ravine, some clothes. A wool hat, another one with a tassel, somebody's work gloves, a pair of woman's boots, an old tweed coat snagged on the branches of a bush, and a trench through the snow, straight down the sharp incline, as if someone half fell, half slid down into the trees below. I hesitated for half a second, then skied, slid on my bum, rolled down into the ravine, and came to rest on a pillow, or at least an old pillowcase still half full of cast-off clothes. I followed the trench through the snow I figured must have been made by Molly down through the trees and came out on a path below. No Molly, no Krista. But through the dark mass of trees, I could see the pinpoint of a fire, and further along, down on the flat, another one. And further again, close to where the river must be, across the road that runs through the bottom of the valley, another faint red glow. Campfires. I walked down the path until it circled back over a deep cut in the ravine spanned by a wooden bridge. A large pipe jutted out of the side of the cut, and heated water from somewhere trickled out of the end of it, and a billow of steam. A man was sitting beside it, shapeless inside a couple of bulky overcoats, scarf tied around his head, a bottle firmly clasped in his hand. Beneath the bridge, there was a kind of lean-to made out of plastic wrap and cardboard, and inside, a few other dark, formless shapes, curled up tight in sleep. A family of trolls guarding the bridge.
All live long day. Excuse me. Hello? Hey.
What? Hey!
I'm looking for a young woman. Young woman on crutches. Have you seen anyone?
Hey, Happy New Year, huh? Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. And I'm the chief of police.
No kidding.
Yep. Well, Happy New Year to you, huh?
Okay.
And a Camptown lady sings song.
I left him, now shrouded in blowing steam as if he were sitting in a Turkish bath, and headed over the bridge, telling myself, I'll only go another 100 feet, then I'll turn back. But then I went another 100 feet, and another, until the path crossed an old road cut into the side of the hill. I could see, down the road a ways, the looming dark shape of an old building, the high stone walls of an abandoned mill.
Krista.
Krista!
It seemed incredible. I could have been walking down a logging road north of Big River, but I wasn't. I was in the middle of, down in the dark basement of, 3 million sleeping people.
Anybody in here?
Couldn't see a thing, but I could smell something. A smudgy, oily fire, smoke stinging my eyes. I took one step further into the inky black, my hands out in front of me, groping for a wall, a post. But the first thing I felt was somebody's face.
Don't move. Don't breathe. Don't even blink, man.
I won't.
Feel that? What's that, huh?
I don't know.
It's a knife, man.
Okay.
It's a very sharp knife, man.
I'm just looking for someone, that's all. Can you, like, hold my neck?
I killed a guy, you know. 8 years in Stony Mountain Pen.
Yeah.
Yeah, a foot and a half scar. All my guts were hanging out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Self-defense. I know who you're looking for.
With that, he let go of my throat and disappeared into the dark. Then I saw his darker shape go through an opening in the wall. I stumbled after him, stepped into a long, murky, smoke-filled room like a barracks. Plastic garbage bags flapped against the wind in the empty windows. A couple of oil rag fires smoldered in the dark. People huddled close to them, sleeping under blankets and overcoats.
Walker? Oh, it's about time, Walker.
Krista. Oh, jeez, Krista.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's me.
Oh, what happened?
I'm glad to see you.
What happened to you?
I fell. Molly tried to get away from him, but he caught up to her, and he was hitting her, and she was calling out for me to help her, so I tried. I tried to go down the path, but I couldn't do it. I fell.
It's okay. It's okay. You're okay.
I couldn't do it.
You must be Mr. Wright, eh?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, Tony over there and his girlfriend, they found her lying on the path. It was almost dark. The other ones, well, we already got them.
What other ones?
Krista struggled to get up from under the plastic sheet that covered her. I could tell she was hurting, but she didn't say anything. She leaned on me. We went over to what looked like a bunch of dirty rags piled in some newspapers.
Molly. She's asleep.
Krista pulled back the collar of an overcoat. A woman was nestled inside. Strands of her hair, straw-colored and limp, covered her face. A face ruddy from the winter wind, worn smooth by weather, cut deep by lines. She looked worn, tired, but still she didn't look all that old. 35, like that worker in the drop-in center had said. Her nose was freshly broken, dried blood on her cheek.
I should have known. But at first he was nice, you know, he seemed kind. Molly didn't say anything. She was just really silent. And then when the three of us were in my car, she freaked. She started to scream, this terrible scream. Mm. As if she was afraid of something no one else could see. I had stopped the car and let her out. He told me to go on. He'd try to calm her down for a moment, but if he couldn't, he'd just leave. He'd catch a cab. But I didn't. I circled around the block, and when I came back, they were in the park. And he wasn't talking anymore. He was shaking her. And then he started to throw all her stuff down the hill. So I got out and tried to help. Jerry, that guy you met over there?
The guy with the knife.
Does he have a knife?
Yeah.
He said her brother dragged her in here. He was screaming at her, bashing her face up against the wall. So they jumped him. Some of them know Molly. It's kind of like a small town down here.
Where's your brother now?
Jerry says they stuck him up in the loft. Walker. I hate the guy. But he could be hurt. He could freeze up there.
What loft? Where?
Well, I don't know exactly.
Jerry, though he couldn't have cared less himself, told me to follow him through the dark and up a ramp of long, springy floorboards to a kind of ledge along the wall, all that was left of the second floor. Then he stood at the foot of a slender ladder, moved it over about a foot. I looked up. I couldn't see anything up there.
He's okay, you know, man. He's got a blanket.
Jerry disappeared back into the dark, and I started to climb. Climb up the old wooden ladder, springing back and forth. And then I came to the end of it, felt the cold stone wall, and directly above my head, a wooden floor, a trap door. I shoved it open, and moonlight shone down on my face. The stone walls of the mill towered above me with empty rows of windows banked with snow, and straight up, instead of a roof, the moon rode in a cloudless sky. The snow was well trampled by the trapdoor, and all over the floor, tracks leading off here and there. I looked around. No movement. Nothing. And then I noticed, in the far corner, a deeper shadow in the shadows. I walked slowly towards it.
Cumberland? Edward Cumberland?
At first, the ragged blanket didn't move. And then it opened slowly, and the moonlight caught the sight of the man's face as he slowly looked up at me.
Are you one of Molly's little friends?
Yes.
You don't know her?
Well, no.
No. You don't know her. She was beautiful. When she was a child, she was young. She was exquisite. You ever heard that word? No. You don't know that word. It was our private word. Exquisite. Rapture. She went away. For years and years, I couldn't find her. That's not Molly down there. No. No.
Come on. Can you stand up? You better get warm.
Have you ever tried to recapture the past? The sweetness, rapture of the past? Mother and father off somewhere. And the grass is green as peppermint under your window. And the garden's filling with the air of delicious perfume. And the curtain's moving like gossamer.
Can't go back. Stay here. You'll freeze.
I am Edward Cumberland. I own a real estate company. I employ 27 salesmen and 8 staff.
Oh.
He grabbed the edge of his blanket and he started to rock. Rock back and forth. It was like I was watching someone disintegrate, crumble, before my eyes. And then, I heard a noise behind me whirled. Inspector Kiss was halfway out of the hole, staring across the snow at me.
Hello, Walker. You having a nice night?
What are you doing?
We've had enough, Aretha. Let's have a little Sonny Boy Williamson.
Oh.
Mmm.
time is it anyway? I should go home. My father, he gets weird. Not that it's any of his business. Right.
Inspector Kiss had brought a small army of cops with him. They took Molly to St. Mike's to fix up her nose and her brother to Wellesley to patch him up, and then they booked him on assault. He didn't seem to care. Krista went up to Sunnybrook to check her hip. It was okay. And then she went home. Inspector Kiss did some checking on Edward and Molly Cumberland. They'd come from a wealthy family in Victoria. When Molly was 12, she was sent off suddenly to a girls' school in Edmonton, and at the same time, Edward was sent off to some schools in Europe. A few years later, Molly just drifted out of sight. Edward took over his father's business, lived in the family home with his mother, and when she died, he hired an agency to look for Molly. The bridal suite at the King Edward Hotel went unused.
What time is it now?
It's about 3.
I should go.
Yeah.
Krista recuperated at home for a few nights. Then one day we just kind of looked at each other, and we went back to my place. And we just held each other and talked about Molly, and held each other and talked about what kind of hell it must have been for her, Edward preying on her when she was growing up, and held each other and wondered whether Molly could ever be capable of charging Edward with something more serious than common assault, and decided probably not. And held each other. And then, well, you know.
Krista.
Hmm?
Sometime you... I mean, anytime... I wouldn't want you to think you couldn't leave. You know what I mean?
Yes, Walker. I know what you mean. Guess what?
What?
Same goes for you.
You have just heard Midnight Cab, Episode 9, The Mystery of the Screaming Woman, written by series creator James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, with Howard Jerome as Mr. Piatelli and Neil Monroe as Inspector Kiss. Chappelle Jaffe was the drop-in center worker and Michael Dyson played the policeman. You heard Wayne Robson as Camper and Tony DeSantis as Jerry, with special guest star Gary Reinecke as Brother Edward. Music for the series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, casting consultant Linda Grierson. Our recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The series production assistant is Nancy Dow. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.